Split
Welcome
roll.
Back. Remember, if you bought a house anywhere but Santa Barbara, you didn't pay enough. Joining me today is Joe Holland. You'd think I'd have an introduction, but he has so many different titles, it's so damn confusing. So let me get this straight. You're the Santa Barbara County Tax Assessor. That's number one. You're the Santa Barbara County Clerk Recorder.
Correct.
And is there a is the third one elections, or is the elections tied in with the recorder part?
No, it'd be the third one, Registrar of Voters. So I'm the county elections official for Santa Barbara County.
And I know I must have asked you this before. First of all, welcome back to Radio Real Estate,
it's
Joe
good
Holland.
To be here.
You're the only guest that comes on the program that's been elected to office. I don't interview people who are elected to office because then you always worry about who's running.
Right.
But apparently, nobody else wants your job, so nobody runs against you. Ken Pettit was on. I started in 1998. He was on. I remember him running unopposed.
Right.
Does anyone ever run? For two people ever run?
Well, typically when the office is open and there isn't an incumbent, then you might get two people running. So for the my very first term, I ran against somebody and then got the job. But, you know, it's when you're doing property tax assessment and recording documents and conducting elections, it's a very unique set of skills. And so your typical person on the street doesn't have those skills.
So it's they're from within the county?
Correct, right. And you know, as an elected county official, I really don't get involved in policy. It's really all about conducting the office professionally and with integrity and transparency, especially in the elections.
But now you sound like a politician, though. So who ran against you? Was it someone from within the county?
Yes, it was someone from within the office, right.
You know, that reminds me of that, and this is very political. We probably didn't want to talk about this, but I remember the district attorney. The current district attorney is a woman, and then there was a guy, and they were running against each other, and it got very political, and there was fallout. I don't even want to mention names because I don't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
You just read stuff in the paper. But did you have the person who was running against you sent away after the election? Or
at the time, it was the only at-will position in the office, so it was pretty much understood that his position would no longer be there after the election. You know, it's interesting. In counties in the state of California, there's only, besides the Board of Supervisors, there's only three required elected officials. And that's the district attorney, the sheriff, and the assessor. So auditor, controller, treasurer, tax collector, they don't necessarily need to be elected. And you might ask, well, why is the assessor linked in there with the sheriff and the district attorney? Well, because I come up with the revenues for the county, having me be elected removes me from direct influence from the Board of Supervisors who count on the revenue. So when I started lowering assessments during the recession, I went to the Board of Supervisors and I explained to them what I was doing. And one of the comments was, well, Joe, do you have to be so proactive? In other words, they wanted me to slow it down a little bit. And
right. It's tough to turn off the revenue tap.
Right. But as a constitutionally elected officer, that's my job, is to assess property fairly.
Follow. And that's the way the rules are set up.
Right.
I remember a story once where I sold a small piece of commercial property. It was an insane, inexpensive deal. I think it was like $160,000 someone bought a piece of commercial property. Yes, it was on San Andreas, but it was a going concern. And the assessor's office came back and said, no, this is too low, and they made it like 180. Which, you know, percentage-wise, I guess
right.
That's a big jump, but my buyers were clearly not upset because it was a weird situation being sold by representatives, attorneys who live out of the country.
Right.
It was a very strange deal.
And, you know, people always have the opportunity to appeal their assessment and provide us with other information. If they think that we've assessed it too high, you know, we'll take a look, we'll review it, and if they don't like what our review comes up with, then they're welcome to appeal it. And there's a board of appellate members that are appointed by the Board of Supervisors that hear the case.
I guess no one's ever come to you and say, hey, I think you appraised my property too low.
No, we don't typically get too much of that.
Not too much of that.
No.
So what is there a specific proposition that allows properties to go up or down or reassess when the market's gone down? Or is
Proposition 8, which interestingly enough was passed in 1978. So Prop 13 passed in June, and Prop 8 passed in November. And what Prop 8 says is that the assessor shall assess a property at its fair market value or its base year value factor. Now, that's what you typically pay for your house, whichever is lower. So they anticipated that under Prop 13, you buy a house, let's say $100,000, it goes up 2% per year, that over years, it might not be worth that $100,000 plus those CPI adjustments. So directed the assessor to lower the assessment. So currently, due to the recession, we still have 15,000 properties that I've assessed at a value lower than what they paid for them during the height of the market.
Right, to readjust. That happened with my house, which I bought in 03. The market went up, up, up. And then, you know, there was an adjustment made.
Right.
So Prop 13 passed in June of 78, and then Prop 8 later that year, November of 1978,
correct.
To just kind of, it was an afterthought. They realized they needed to address this issue.
Correct. And you know what's interesting? I was just sitting in your lobby looking at some of the old headlines, and I'm looking at a 1973 headline, and it says, housing prices rise dramatically. And in 1973, a house in Goleta was going for $70,000, where the year before it was only going for $50,000. That's a huge increase. And prior to Prop 13, the assessor would just reassess all those properties at the higher level. And of course, taxes were going through the roof. And then for people on a fixed income to see this happen, that's what led to Prop 13.
So was the initial base always 1%? And was Prop 13 then saying, okay, but we're going to cap the increase? What was the original
base? So Prop
base?
13 put in the 1%. What the Board of Supervisors could do and did on an annual basis was adjust the percentage to meet their revenue needs. So not only would the assessor reassess periodically, like every 3 years, they would do a different area of the county, and then the Board of Supervisors could adjust the percentage rate, the tax rate, to whatever they needed to meet their revenue needs. And so that's what led to Prop 13.
That's kind of the cart before the horse, whatever that expression is. That just doesn't seem fair. Like, hey, you know, we need more money, so you're going to pay more money without any due process. Like, we have income taxes and all this stuff that are set and regulated.
Right.
It seemed kind of capricious that they could just... Now, but the base, though, if you bought a house Prop 13 for $100,000. Now today, well, let's say a million. Today it would be 1%. I usually use 1.1% for local, be $10,000. What pre-Prop 13, how did they know what to start as a basis for the?
Well, the assessor annually would come up with the assessment roll. Like I said, they would periodically do one-third of the county and every 3 years.
So you said that. But so in other words, there was nothing... the time of sale, the price you paid, wasn't necessarily going to dictate and be a barometer for your taxes.
For your particular property, no. The assessor would use that sale as an indication of what all the other properties in the area were worth. So in 73, that $50,000 house, now we're $70,000. They would apply that $70,000 market value to all the houses in the Goleta area.
My guest, Joe Holland, Santa Barbara County Tax Assessor, County Clerk Recorder, and Registrar of Voters, all three. He's wearing all three hats today. And by the way, when I said, ending the first segment, I asked Richard if my guest was already here. He was already here. You know, when you have three titles, you show up early. So at Prop 13, we're going to talk about a legal case from Los Angeles, because it's still controversial. Last week I donated some money to a friend's kid who needed it for his football team or baseball team or basketball team. And then another, gal come in with another donation for their, tennis team. So the schools, they don't have enough money. And of course they lament the fact that Prop 13 squeezed them off, but it seems like more people are still happy with Prop 13, would you say? Or
Yes and no. There are obviously inequities built into Prop 13, because Prop 13 is an ownership-based property tax assessment system. So two instances under which you get reassessed. One is change in ownership, and the other is new construction. So this whole concept of a change in ownership was brand new in 1978. So there are some impacts of this change in ownership methodology that the schools haven't been happy with.
And they're the and what's the split again when we pay our county taxes? Do you know the percentages? What stays in the county? What goes to the state?
Yeah. So in Santa Barbara County, of your 1% basic property tax rate, about 45% of that goes to schools. 27% or so goes to the county. About 11% goes to cities, and then the remainder goes to special districts.
So we didn't hear the state in there.
Well, the 45% to the for schools? The schools goes up to the state and then comes back. unless you're unless you're one of the school districts that's a little richer, and I forget what they're called, but then the money just goes direct, goes up to the state, but all of it comes back.
All of it comes back. Yeah. I was going to say 45% goes up. And then how much it comes back.
Yeah, so, I think it all comes
okay,
back.
So that's part of this, the state's input, 45%. So almost half of our county taxes end up at the schools. Mm-hmm. 27% goes to the county.
Right, and that's for your sheriff, your DA.
All those elected officials.
Yes.
And it's funny, you named the two of them. Two of the, and you're the third one. And you pocket how much?
Oh, I don't know how much I... My budget's about $16 million for the entire department, but that includes elections and recorder. And
I heard there's an election coming up.
Yeah, there is an election coming up.
11% to the city, so yes. City of Goleta Incorporated, they're real
correct.
Happy. They're getting
right.
some. They're getting
city
some.
City of Santa Barbara gets their cut, and all eight of the cities.
So one of the, okay, so before we get into, there's this case in L.A., mm-hmm. and before we start on that, it's all based on change of ownership and Prop 13, and it's one of the main attributes or components, I should say, of Prop 13 that's in the crosshairs of a lot of people,
correct.
Is this change of ownership, particularly in commercial, and is a very interesting legal case, and we'll talk about that maybe after we take a break, but let's also talk about Prop 13. You buy a house, assessed basically on the purchase price, which was brand new in 78. But then there's a case where they allow you to shift, allow you to transfer the tax base. And the first one is Prop 58.
Prop 58 allows you to transfer the tax base to your children, especially on your single-family residence. So, I mean, on your owner-occupied home. So you can
primary residence.
Yeah, primary residence. You can transfer that tax base, that low tax base, to your children, and then they get that tax base. You can also do up to $1 million of commercial property, and that's the assessed value of $1 million. So if you own some industrial property and you've owned it for a long time and you want to pass it on to your kids, you can do that.
So if you bought a property for, and by commercial property, you mean residential income or anything that's
correct.
Not your primary residence?
Right.
So if you bought a property in 1980 for $300,000 and now the market value is $1 million, the assessed value won't be $1 million because your basis is that low?
Correct.
Ah.
Right. So it's $300,000. So if you want to transfer that to your kids will get that $300,000 assessment even though the property is worth $1 million.
Now, buddy, market value.
Market value.
So a buddy of mine who bought several properties in the 80s, mm-hmm. and for easy math, let's say he bought three at $330,000 each, and he wants to leave all three to his daughter, he could technically transfer the three buildings?
Correct, because it's under $1 million. So two of them would be not his primary residence, but if he wanted to move into one of them, have it be his primary residence,
yes.
transfer to his daughter, then move into the next one, establish it as his primary residence. Basically, you just have to get a homeowner's exemption.
Right.
Transfer it to his daughter. So you could do that as many times as you want for your primary residence.
Oh, that's prior to your death. I was thinking about upon his death, he was going to leave.
You can do it prior. You don't have to die to do this. And but if what I encourage people to do is just put the we have forms in our office. So if you have a will or a trust, just put the Prop 58 form in there, and then your kids can take advantage of that after your passing.
Now, it reminds me of the shell game people were using with the $500,000 capital gains exclusion, which is unrelated to this topic. But people would, it was applicable to your primary residence. So people would sell their primary residence, move into a rental they've owned for 10 years, live there for the required amount of time, which I think was two out of an aggregate of 2 or 5 years, sell that, again get the exclusion. So they tweaked that a little to avoid that little effect, the stepping stone effect. So what you're saying with transferring your tax base, you could transfer your primary residence tax base to your children more than once during your lifetime?
Absolutely. If you have more than one house, yes.
I did not know that.
Yeah. No, you can. You just have to get a homeowner's exemption on it every time.
Right.
And then, you know, fill out the paperwork during that real-time period when you have that homeowner's exemption.
But my example, and then we'll take a break and come back with this legal case in L.A. that talked about commercial property and kind of the shell game of not transferring and not triggering reassessment on Prop 13, which irks a lot of people. So my example was my buddy bought, let's say, three properties in the 80s, $330,000 each. It's $1 million. Forget the primary residence aspect. When he dies, he could leave all three properties to his daughter under this Prop 58.
Right.
And she inherits the properties and she inherits the tax base.
Correct.
Because it's not over $1 million. So it's as many properties as you own.
Correct. Right. She would just need to fill out the paperwork.
Do you hear that sound, the champagne cork popping right now? I can't wait to tell my buddy. My guest, Joe Holland, Santa Barbara County Tax Assessor, County Clerk Recorder, and the Registrar of Voters is today's guest. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with, let's see, there's Prop 60, and then we'll talk about this Los Angeles case, legal case. Is that related to the LEOP?
Yes, yeah. Legal Entity Ownership Program.
Mark Schneiman's Radio Real Estate. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.